People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Fine Music Radio and it's People of Note. Now, here's something. I wonder if you've seen or heard anything about a brand new orchestra that's been formed in South Africa. It's called the Mother City Orchestra, and this is a full-time professional touring orchestra that will have its home base here in Cape Town, but they plan to travel with popular concerts, such as their inaugural concerts on the Strauss Gala, for example. There'll be nights at the opera, Mozart evenings, and so on. And there'll be picnic-style concerts at wine farms, such as Daria, Nooitgedacht, Grand Roche, etc. They've auditioned a whole lot of young musicians to be part of this orchestra, as I say, a full-time professional orchestra, and the conductor is Xavier Kluter. Now, you might remember his name, having won in 2013 the Len van Zyl Conductors Competition, and we had him here as a guest on Fine Music Radio, and he spent a long time now in Bloemfontein, being there lecturer of orchestral conducting and studies and also resident conductor of the orchestra there, the Odeon School of Music. But now, with this new orchestra, Xavier will move to Cape Town, where the orchestra, as I say, will be based, and do all the traveling. So, Xavier, welcome to Fine Music Radio.
Good morning, Rodney. Thank you for having me again.
It's good to see you once again. You spent, what, 6 years in Bloemfontein?
6 years it was in Bloemfontein. Yeah, it was a kind of a sharpening of the trade, I can call it. It was a very educational journey for me. Mm-hmm. Being in Bloemfontein, working with a student orchestra there was fantastic for me. Yeah. It was a great teaching environment, both for the orchestra and for myself.
I'm glad you said for yourself, because I'm sure with a student orchestra, you possibly have to work much harder than with a professional orchestra.
Of course. Every rehearsal is a teaching environment.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So you would have heard a slight maybe smile in my voice when I said a new orchestra here, the Mother City Orchestra. So Xavier, I just want to start to put things in context here. As you know, the big orchestras here, the professional orchestras, Cape Town, KZN, PO, and Johannesburg, are battling to survive. And suddenly we're hearing about a new orchestra that's going to be touring the country. How is this possible? How did this come about?
Well, the orchestra was the brainchild of Chris Ludovic. He's our CEO. And the idea came at about 2015. And something happened in his family. His sister passed away, and those plans were put on hold. And last year, I contacted him and asked him, are they still going ahead with the orchestra? And he said, of course, because I wanted to initially be part of the orchestra as a bassoonist. And then he said, well, they are looking for a conductor. And I said, well, I'm your guy.
Yes, of course, yeah. Of course.
And so since last year, November, I've started reaching out to musicians, sending out emails and getting some kind of interest. And that's what led to the inauguration in February.
Just tell us who Chris Ludovic is.
Chris Ludovic is the CEO of the orchestra. He's a lawyer by profession. He also has affiliated to MCO is NTO, the National Theatre Organization, which is a company more focused on theatre productions. We also, this is news, have launched an opera company, Diva Opera, and we are planning to do opera as well next year, also on a touring basis.
And when you say a touring basis, does this mean touring properly, like to smaller towns as well as to the cities?
Yes. We will tour to smaller towns with the orchestra and the opera, because sometimes the audiences, you have to go to your audience. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people who would like to attend concerts live 200 or 300 kilometers away and they don't have the means to attend a concert. So by touring to the audience, we are effectively expanding on our audiences.
And your players seem to me to be fairly young, which is a good thing, isn't it? Because you've given a chance. Where did you find them? Or I know you said you sent out emails and so on. And now you've managed to get together a full symphony orchestra. Where did you find them all?
So the orchestra members are from all around South Africa. We had people relocating from Johannesburg. Our concertmaster is from Pretoria. We've got musicians from Bloemfontein. We've got musicians from Durban. I basically sent out a lot of emails to everybody that I know, finding out who is interested, who would want to audition, and everybody replied and said, contact this one, contact that one. And at the end of the day, I had more than 100 applications orchestra, which I had to reduce to about 65. And from that 65, the orchestra was chosen.
And so you then had to do a whole audition process. You did full auditions, presumably.
That's correct. I did auditions. We used the FISMA at the Conservatorium at Stellenbosch. And it was about 4 days of auditions to get through. I had some of the principal musicians that I approached help me, that was on the panel. And we had a good time. We went out for some celebratory drinks afterwards. but it was successful. It was our musicians are top class, very good, very professional. And we've had a few concerts, and I can see that they are starting to gel now.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you just this last week had your inaugural concert here in Cape Town, didn't you? Or where was it?
It was in Franschhoek.
In Franschhoek, yeah.
Yes, La Residence.
And now that was like a Strauss, because we said a Strauss-type gala. This is what you're going to do. Are you going to concentrate on the more popular music and perhaps not do the symphonic repertoire?
Yes, I feel that it's a little bit more relaxing for audience members. We had people laying on blankets, on their backs, yeah, having a glass of wine. The atmosphere should be relaxed. We don't want to create, especially for the non-regular concert goers, the perception of having to sit up straight in your seat and be too scared to open a suite, or, you know, with a fear of being stared at. Also, yeah, we are going after a very relaxed environment with the audiences.
Hence your picnic concerts on wine farms and so on, where people literally can take a picnic basket and a blanket and sit and listen to the music. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct. At La Residence, where we were on Sunday, it was a full sold-out concert. Extra tickets were sold, and people thoroughly enjoyed the concert because it was such a relaxed environment. People brought their dogs.
Yeah.
The kids were there. People were eating, having a snack while enjoying the music.
Yeah, and the musicians probably loved it, playing together. This is people, every time I speak to a musician, they say they just desperately want to play again.
That's correct. That's correct. The musicians enjoyed it. It was our first concert,
yeah,
and they played their hearts out.
Okay.
It was for some of them, it was the first time in a year and a half that they actually played a live concert.
Let's have your first piece of music. Xavier, your intermezzo, I see you've asked for the intermezzo from Cavalleria Rusticana. And is there a special reason for this, apart from the fact that it's a beautiful piece?
Yeah. It was my mom's favorite. I'm going to get a little emotional. Yeah, it was her favorite piece of music.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that's for her.
That's a good introduction. Thanks. Yeah. Let's have the intermezzo by Mascagni from Cavalleria Rusticana.
Thank you.
the intermezzo from the opera Cavalleria Rusticana by Pietro Mascagni, and the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Xavier Klutter, the conductor of the newly formed Mother City Orchestra. And we've been talking about this orchestra and how it came into being. And there's one question I absolutely have to ask you, and I'm not entirely sure how you're going to answer, but where did the money come from?
Well, it's all private funding.
Is it?
Yeah, it's all private funding. I thought it was the best route to get private funding, myself and Chris. Apart from being the conductor and the resident conductor, I'm also a director on the board of the orchestra. And we just thought it would be best to get private funding because there's less red tape, if I can call it like that. Tape attached to that. You have liberty to do whatever you'd like.
Yeah. Is it like a sort of Section 21 company, that sort of thing?
I'm not too sure.
Oh, okay. I think that's, yeah. Because I think Fine Music Radio is a Section 21 company where we rely a lot on donations and things like that.
Yes.
And it has a board and all that.
Yes, yes. I'm okay. On the board as well. Myself and Chris are part of the directors of the orchestra.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So getting back to the actual orchestra, how much did you have to work quite a lot with rehearsals to get them sounding right, or whether have you managed to get yourself a good batch of musicians?
Yeah, it was surprisingly good at the first rehearsal.
Was it?
Yeah, the musicians gelled in the rehearsal very quickly.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was going to take about two rehearsals for them to get used to me, my conducting, and playing together. Because for some of them, especially for the musicians that are not from Cape Town, it was the first time for them playing together in an ensemble of this magnitude. But it was surprising to me that they took to each other like duck to water, they say.
As they say.
Yeah.
So with rehearsals and things, these people, have they had to relocate to Cape Town, the musicians, or do they fly down when there are concerts?
Yes, many of them relocated to Cape Town. I think there are about 12 in the orchestra that are not from Cape Town. Some that were from Cape Town but were living in other provinces that eventually moved back.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them relocated to Cape Town to be part of this orchestra.
Yeah, and I saw on your website, I think it was a bus taking you around. An orchestra bus will take you to these towns close, apart from when you have to fly.
Yes, we formed a collaboration with Al Joza Bus Company, and we are planning to get a bus on a wet lease situation or a wet lease process. So we're going to have the bus branded, and then they will be our official transportation for when we go on tour. Very nice luxury bus with air cons and USB ports and plugs and everything else. So we were very impressed with the bus company.
Yeah.
We spoke to the owner, Johannes, a very accommodating person. And we formed a very good relationship with him, and we will be using their transport.
Gosh, it all sounds very positive. And it's nice to see you smiling in a satisfied way.
Very, very satisfied with it. They are very professional, and as soon as we send an email or make a phone call, within 5 minutes, everything is arranged.
My goodness me.
Yeah.
So that must also make you feel secure. You don't have to worry. And having a branded bus, I think, is a great idea.
Yes, it takes a lot of extra stress away if the transport is sorted for the musicians, and because we've got percussion instruments and everything, and everything fits quite nicely onto the bus and into the bus. So that's one less thing to worry about.
Yeah, gosh. Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about conducting. I said that you won the 2013 Len Van Zyl Conductors Competition, and part of that meant that you went overseas to Philadelphia, for example, and worked with Yannick Nezet-Seguin, who's a very big name now. He's the conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra of the Met.
Yeah.
And we commented on the fact that he was short. Yeah. And then you said something very interesting. You said, you wish you were short. And I just want you to explain that, because it was such an interesting story that you prefer smaller movements as a shorter man would do. Or just explain to me what you mean.
Yes. What I meant was not really that short. just maybe 10 centimeters shorter, because and I have my body in relation to that length, because as a conductor, being a little taller means that every gesture you make is amplified. So the shorter or the less movements you make, the more compact your conductor. It's less for the orchestra to focus on.
Mm.
If you're swinging your arms about or you're looking clumsy, it creates a lot of confusion amongst the orchestra members. They don't know where to look or what to follow. Your gestures look very amplified. And I prefer conducting a little smaller, like one of my teachers used to say, imagine that you are conducting in this little box in front of you. I don't like this elaborate arms wide spread, and all. I like to be a little bit more compact. And it feels to me that I do that because I'm so tall, and so I would prefer to be a little bit more compact.
Oh, well, we can't help that, I'm afraid.
No.
Nothing we can do can help that. But, Xavier, let's take another piece of music. Then I want to ask you about this fascinating thesis you did about body language and conducting and so on. But your piece is the Romance for Bassoon, and I know, as you've said, you're a bassoonist yourself. Your first job was as a bassoonist in the Orchestra Natal, wasn't it?
That's correct. That's correct.
So you've chosen Elgar's Romance for Bassoon.
Yes, yes. This one is dedicated to Ingo Holland. He was my teacher, and this is one of the pieces I studied. I think it was in first year. And it made a very good impression on me musically. Mm-hmm. I love Elgar's music. It's like the English version of Mahler. But coincidentally, this was one of the pieces I conducted in my international debut in Finland with the principal bassoon of the Lahti Symphony Orchestra, Harry Amas, I think his name was. And this piece of music it's very special to me.
Thank you.
The Romance for Bassoon by Elgar, played there by Ingo Holland, who's based here in Cape Town, and as you heard, was Xavier's teacher. Xavier Klutter, the conductor, is my guest. On People of Note, we're talking about the Mother City Orchestra, but at the moment I want to talk a little bit more about you, Xavier, and we'll come back to the orchestra, because I see that you recently got your master's degree and that your thesis was a qualitative study exploring verbal and nonverbal communication of an orchestral conductor, which relates to what we were talking about just beforehand with gestures and things.
Yeah.
What made you choose a subject like that?
I'm always fascinated with communication, whether it's language or facial expressions or how people communicate. And I thought it would be fitting to employ that idea into conducting. Not a lot of research has been done on that topic. So I thought, okay, being a conductor, you are basically in a concert setting a voiceless piece of communication.
Yes.
You are a translator of what is on paper. You have to visualize and make your gestures seem readable and translatable for the orchestra so that they can perform the music how you would like them to be in a concert setting.
Mm-hmm.
And the verbal aspect came for the rehearsal settings. So how you address the orchestra, the infliction on your voice, the tone of your voice, how you explain something, how you request something is important because it's a very psychological, the way you ask or request something from the orchestra, how to play something longer or louder or shorter or softer.
Mm.
It's all about communication. And so the nonverbal part also has to do with your gestures, how big they are, how small they are, how precise they are, because that is another wide topic, accents and all of those things, how to show the musicians how to do all of those things. So that was a very, very long, in-depth study, to say the least.
You were in a good position to do it, being a conductor and also working with student orchestras and professional orchestras. So I presume you were the ideal person to do something like that. Are you happy with the outcome? Did you pass?
Yes, I was very happy with the outcome. I interviewed about 10 conductors internationally and about 3 or 4 local conductors. And the range of questions that I asked was from preparation for rehearsals, because that will determine gestures you'll use,
mm-hmm.
To questions of what kind of facial expressions do you make? Is it important to have sectional rehearsals, for example? And the main idea was that your gestures that you use to conduct should be of that caliber that it shaves off of the rehearsal time. If you can communicate clearly with your body, i.e. your gestures, facial expression, body language, you won't have to stop as frequently in a rehearsal, because if you are easily readable and musicians can translate what you're trying to say with your gestures, this is now in the ideal setting, of course.
Yes, no, I understand.
So you should be able to, you know, shave off some of the rehearsal time and mm-hmm. use rehearsals more effectively instead of stopping every 5 or 6 seconds for
to, I mean, the mark of a successful conductor is how they run their rehearsals, isn't it? Because you can't waste an orchestra's time, especially a professional orchestra. So you have to do a lot of preparation before you arrive at the first rehearsal, don't you?
That's correct.
And know what you want and how you're going to communicate to them.
That's correct. And it's important for you to always remember what you ask of an orchestra.
Mm.
It would frustrate an orchestra tremendously if on day one you, for example, insist on a ritardando at a certain passage and tomorrow you exclude it from the music. You would confuse them. But also that you stick to your ideas and, like you said, your preparation needs to be thorough. And it's sometimes overlooked. Well, the audience comes to the concert and they see the concert. They don't see the 5 days or the 4 days of rehearsal before that, and they don't see your 2 months of preparation before those rehearsals. Sometimes it's overlooked. It's nobody's fault, really. People that concert goers are not aware of the conductor.
No, we go as concert goers to actually hear the finished product, don't we? We don't know all the hours that the individual instrumentalists as well have been practicing their parts before they come to the rehearsal.
That's correct.
So
as much as the conductor needs to be prepared, the orchestra also needs to be prepared.
Yes. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you was, you talked about reading a conductor. And for example, our orchestra here, we don't really have, we have Bernard Gürler as our principal conductor, but there are other conductors that visit. And each of them has a different style, don't they? So the orchestra literally has to learn to read what he's going to do. Like, for example, they often talk about where the downbeat is. Is it two beats before, you know, that sort of thing?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. It's like a... It's like your voice. Everybody has a unique voice. And if I walk down the corridor and I hear you, I'll immediately say, oh, that's Rodney speaking.
Yeah, that's true.
So when you're standing in front of an orchestra, you have your own set of kind of gestures. It's all the same. Mm-hmm. It's like the English language. We're all using English language. But our dialect and our emphasis and our inflection of certain words and our voices are all different, but yet we are all speaking English. Yeah. So we're all conducting, whether it's in 3-4 or 4-4. Everybody has their own way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And for an orchestra to be able to read a conductor takes approximately an half an hour, 20 minutes, half an hour,
okay,
just to get used to their specific style of conducting.
Mm-hmm.
But when an orchestra like CTPO and now myself having the Mother City Orchestra have a constant conductor, it's very easy. When I move my hand in a certain way, the orchestra will respond in a certain way. So it's good to have a resident conductor for an orchestra.
Absolutely. I mean, the great orchestras of the world are the ones that have had resident conductors like Berlin or Chicago or London or wherever.
That's correct.
There was a lovely, I don't know if you ever saw that video called Great Conductors of the Past, and there was a wonderful comment from the clarinetist Jack Brimer, who was a well-known clarinetist in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And I remember him saying, conducting is evidence of telepathy more than anything else. It's definitely a form of telepathy that happens between you and the players, and between the players themselves, I would say.
That's correct. That's where the ensemble, and why I found it so fascinating that they could play together so freely and so easily. There's actually a video clip of Leonard Bernstein with, I think it's the Haydn Symphony number 88, where he does not use his hands at all.
Yes, it is number 88. Yeah. I know what you mean. He just stands there.
He just stands and eyebrows and smiles and nods. And like you said, it's telepathy.
Yeah.
It also forms part of the rehearsal process. If you would have done that in the rehearsal, they would have known, we need nods like this, they need an accent here, or they need louder, or
when
he smiles.
It was a bit showy. But it did prove
But he was one of the greats, and I would expect nothing less from him.
Yeah, I'm a huge Leonard Bernstein fan. Yeah. But now we're going to have another piece of music. Dvorak Slavonic Dance number 8, one of the famous Slavonic dances. Is there a special reason for you choosing this?
Yes, it's one of the favorite pieces of one of my mentors, Lick Temming, the conductor of KZN Philharmonic. He was very influential in my career. Not that other teachers of mine, Sasha Makela from Finland, Viktor Jampolsky, we all know, Lick was very instrumental by, you know, throwing me in the deep side at some points. You know, I remember when I was, because I used to conduct KZN for school concerts and, you know, some outreach things. And I remember one morning, because we were four bassoonists in the orchestra, it was my off day, and there was an education concert, and I took my daughter to school or to creche, and I went back home, and I thought, okay, today I'm going to have a surf or something. And he phoned me at 8 and said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm about to head out. I'm going to go to the beach. Go conduct.
Really?
Yeah.
And you had to take over.
I had to take over. And he was very instrumental in the practical side of things, putting me in front of the orchestra and saying, go and conduct, because it's like riding a bike. You know, you can read a book about riding a bicycle, but if you don't get on and fall your knees to smithereens, you will never know how to ride a bike. So he was one of those people that would just, he took me by the hand and said, come, I'll help you. And this is one of his favorites, and I'd like to dedicate this to him.
One of the famous Slavonic dances by Dvorak from the first set, number 8, and a choice of my guest, Xavier Kluter, the conductor of the Mother City Orchestra, which has just been launched. But you mentioned, Xavier, just now, you mentioned Durban and Lichtenberg, and I said you were appointed principal bassoon, weren't you, first of all, and then they started giving you opportunities to conduct, like you said, school orchestras and so on.
No, I was not the principal bassoon.
Oh, you're not principal?
No, okay. I was not the principal bassoon. I was part of the bassoon section as a cadet at the time.
You don't want to upset the principal bassoon.
No. Well, she unfortunately passed away. Vesila Minkova, beautiful person, she passed away. And ironically, the Maskanya was the first piece we played. 2 minutes after her death, we received an SMS to say Vesi just passed away, and her husband, Luba, was also a bassoonist in the orchestra, and that was you can imagine how that went. Everybody was in tears while we were playing that. It was an outreach concert as well. Myself and Anele, the other bassoonist, were playing, and what an experience that was. Oh, my gosh.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah. You know, when you then came and you won the Len van Zyl competition in 2013, one of the big things, as we said earlier, was going overseas to Philadelphia and Victor Jampolsky helping you in Chicago and all the rest of it. Yeah. But you also worked with Christoph von Dohnányi, according to this.
Yes.
And have you ever seen his video of rehearsing the London Philharmonic with Haydn 88?
No, I have not.
It is completely fascinating.
Oh,
you must get a copy.
I'll definitely have a look at that.
I'll lend it to you.
What I learned from him was this relaxed environment in the rehearsal. Everything does not need to be so
frenetic.
Yeah. He's in charge, but very charismatic, very laid back.
You see that in this. You must see it. You see it. And the way he nurtures the orchestra.
Yes.
And this is the London Philharmonic. And he's not bossing them around, and they're not being horrible.
Yeah.
They're making music and shaping music together.
Exactly.
But he has an incredible sense of detail.
Yes.
With Haydn's scores, exactly.
Yes. Well, and from what I learned from him was that, you know, the rehearsal process is what I call it, you know, because that's where the hard work takes place.
Mm.
I take a back seat when it comes to performance because you have to guide the musicians through the performance.
Because you've done all the work.
Exactly. The work takes place during the rehearsals. And with him, it was, you know, when I listen to the radio, the host, you can always hear them speaking with a smile.
Mm.
And what I noticed from him is that he's always conducting with a smile. And that to me was, you are assisting the musicians and making them feel comfortable in presenting this product, basically.
Yeah.
This piece of music, it must be enjoyable and create that environment that does not feel that they are kind of put on the spot when they have to play, but that they should enjoy
the music-making process. Much as the audience is going to enjoy it.
Yes.
It's a fascinating video for people to watch who don't know about rehearsals, people who love music. And I took it when we went on St. Helene on a couple of tours, when I did a conductor talk to show them. It's available commercially, but it's well worthwhile seeing how a conductor really works.
Really works.
And also little balances between sections, for example.
Yeah.
And saying to the flute, listen to the strings, listen.
Yeah.
And I want you to be just a little louder. And you hear it. It's magical.
Yeah.
It's magical.
There are also some tricks in the trade, you know, like when a flute plays and it's accompanied by strings, like when the string players play more over the fingerboard, it takes away a lot of the harmonics. So to blend with a flute is a little easier, and the overtones don't clash if there is an intonation problem. So sometimes tricks of the trade help a little bit, you know. So you have to be aware of all of these things when you prepare and see which sections are playing together, which should be a little bit louder, which should be a little bit more prominent.
But another thing, as a conductor, I dare say you've had to learn as a young conductor, is this whole business of bowing. Like you said, bowing closer to the fingerboard creates a different sort of sound of overtones. But also the length of the orchestra, you often hear a conductor saying, you've got this much bow, please use it all.
Yeah.
Don't just scratch your head.
It's all circumstantial. It's all in that the sound and the texture you want to create.
Mm.
I've had to do a lot of bowings over the years, and because I was not a string player.
That's what I was thinking.
So I've read multiple books on bowings and string technique and how to do certain things, how to get more articulation out of the instrument, how to get a glossier sound, how to get a cleaner sound, how to get a softer sound, how to get it took for me reading so many books just to educate myself on that, and now I feel comfortable if I want to ask the concertmaster to change the bowing because of a certain effect or a certain texture I want to create. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable to say, please change the bowing to this and that and that, and please do it like this. Use a longer bow, fuller bow, or shorter bow stroke, or play it at the tip or at the frog, or it's all tricky.
It's a fascinating business, and this is what we don't see as an audience.
Yeah.
But now your next piece of music is a bit confusing because, first of all, theoretically it's 16 minutes long, so we can't take it all.
Yeah.
Ravel's Bolero.
Yes.
What are we going to play now? What are we going to do?
It's a little, a bit of a philosophical choice of mine. Bolero is a 16-minute long crescendo.
Yes, it is.
And
yeah.
I found it's my dad's favorite orchestral piece of music, but I've related to it somehow because my music career started very softly, if I can call it. I started my music career as an organist, and to end up as a conductor, it's just one hell of a crescendo towards the end.
Oh, I see what you're going with.
Yeah, and through the years, I've had to, you know, as this piece of music comes, more and more instruments get added. I've had to increase my knowledge over the years, bit for bit for bit, to get to the point where I am now, rehearsal letter 16, where the whole orchestra gets together, you know, and plays all of this. It's a culmination of everything I've learned in the past, the support from my wife, the support from my parents, the support from my in-laws, the support from my brother, the support from everyone around me, my teachers, my mentors, everybody adding to this crescendo, which has this explosion at the end. And now that I'm resident conductor of Mother City Orchestra, a new orchestra, I'm part of, you know, the birthing of this orchestra. I've run out of words. I mean, this has been the highlight of my career.
I'm sure.
And this orchestra is going to continue with this crescendo musically, and the life of this orchestra is going to be so long and so successful. I feel it.
That's a wonderful reason for playing Bolero.
Yeah.
But we can't play it all.
No. if you can play half of it, it's okay.
Okay.
The second half of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how about that? Now, that was apparently a flash mob version of part of Bolero by Ravel, and it was the choice of Xavier Klutter, the conductor, who's with me here. We've got very little time left, Xavier, but as that was playing, you told me that the Mother City Orchestra did a flash mob version of Bolero at Tigerberg. What is that right?
Tiger Valley Center, Tiger Valley Shopping Center, yes. It was the first weekend in February. Uh-huh. It was part of a promotion that we did, and we also did Radetzky March and Wien, Du Stadt meine Träume. It's part of our concert series.
Yeah, your Strauss Gala. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. And did it go down well? Were the people suitably fascinated?
Oh, yes, definitely.
The shoppers.
Oh, they didn't want us to leave. They wanted more and more and more, and we couldn't.
That's always good. So, Xavier, just as we end now, I have to wish you well for a remarkably ambitious project, but you sound very positive. Everything sounds positive. The Mother City Orchestra. And you're having some opening concerts now, this week and next week, on various wine farms and elsewhere. And how do people find out about your concerts and more about you?
Patrons would like to attend the concerts, they can visit our website. It's www.mothercityorchestra.co.za. And to book concerts, it's www.straussgala.online. They can book tickets directly through the website.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I say, I wish you well, Xavier, and hoping to hear back from you in time to see how it's all going. And good on you for taking music around the country to all these places. So now you've chosen some Strauss to end your exit music.
Yes.
What?
Unter Donner und Blitz.
Why?
It's loud, and it's going to create the bang that we need to get audience members.
Okay, no, I'm sure you will. Thank you. Here's Donner und Blitz by Strauss, and as I say, my guest, Xavier Klutter. Thank you, Xavier, and best of luck to you.
Thank you, Rodney, for having me.
People of Note was brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.